Because this was the region's most secure prison, it was where captured radical Islamists were kept. King was especially keen on observing if they were being treated differently from other prisoners. His organization classified them as political prisoners. Before he could begin his tour, however, he needed to get by Superintendent Abbas.
"If you come into a man's house, especially to cast stones," Abbas said, "you should bring him a gift or token of your appreciation."
So this was why Abbas was stalling. He expected a bribe. King couldn't believe the gall. Part of his task was to identify corrupt superintendents, and Abbas was so corrupt he didn't seem to understand that his thinly veiled demand was against the law. Either that, or he simply didn't care. Glancing to his right, King noticed an 8x10-inch color photograph hanging on the office wall. It showed Abbas arm in arm with several men wearing numbered athletic jerseys. Nodding to the picture, King asked, "You play football?" Abbas followed King's glance to the snapshot.
"No, kabaddi. Do you know the game?"
"Anything like rugby?" King asked. The chair underneath Abbas squeaked as he leaned forward to smash out his cigarette in an already butt-filled black plastic ashtray on his desk.
"You're an American, aren't you?" he asked.
"Canadian, actually, but I get mistaken for an American all the time."
"Let me ask you this, Mr. Canadian. How do you expect to tell me how I should manage a Pakistani prison when you don't even know about kabaddi?"
Without waiting for an answer, Abbas barked an order into his desk phone and then told his guest,
"One of my wardens will give you a tour now."
King was about to thank Abbas when the wall behind the superintendent exploded. Chunks of mud, bricks, and plaster flew toward the Canadian, who was blown off his chair by the blast. King flew backward into the wall behind him, slamming into it hard before falling face first onto the dirty tile floor. Struggling to remain conscious, he felt a jarring pain in his thigh and saw a bone poking through his right pant leg. The ringing in his ears temporarily deafened him. Obviously, someone had detonated a bomb outside the building. Superintendent Abbas had fared worse than King. The Pakistani was buried under rubble and wasn't moving. King crawled toward him and pushed two chunks of fallen wall off the prison official's body. Abbas was dead. There was an opening where the back wall had been. King pulled himself to the gap so he could see into the prison yard. The explosion had blown a hole in the prison's outer wall that men armed with AK-47 rifles and rocket-propelled grenade launchers were now scrambling through. The gap was so large that several of the attackers were able to ride motorcycles through it. One drove the bike while the second rider fired his weapon. The intruders quickly killed the guards standing watch in the prison's corner towers. They were the only employees who had guns. The prison officials inside the cell blocks were armed only with clubs, a precaution meant to keep prisoners from obtaining firearms if they rioted and overpowered guards. The cell house guards quickly realized they were no match for the intruders. They tossed down their clubs and dropped to their knees, voluntarily locking their fingers together behind their heads in hopeful submission. Within minutes, prisoners were being freed from their cells and escaping into the prison yard. By now, King's hearing was returning, and he spotted a slender black man with a megaphone in the prison yard calling names. The prisoners he was summoning were gathering around him in the yard. King heard voices outside the superintendent's office and realized the intruders were about to enter the room. He thought about crawling to Abbas's corpse to retrieve the pistol strapped to his belt, but quickly rejected that idea. It would be impossible for him to shoot his way out of the prison, especially with a compound fracture. If the attackers saw him armed, they would shoot first. King's best chance of surviving was to surrender and seek mercy. After all, he wasn't a prison official. He was a guest, a foreigner, someone who had come to Pakistan to help its people. King removed his shirt and formed a tourniquet above the break in his right leg. A part of him simply wished he could play dead and let whatever was going to unfold happen. Someone kicked on the office's door, which was blocked by rubble. Another strong kick opened the door wide enough for the barrel of an AK-47 to poke through it. A man's voice yelled in Urdu, Pakistan's most common language,
Foreigner, King hollered back in English. No guns.
The owner of the AK-47 peeked through the crack. King raised both hands. The gunman yelled again.
I don't understand, King replied. Canadian!